You're listening to Almost Famous with Jim Francis Meza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Howdy, guys, and we're off to the races, as I normally say. Hope everyone's having a wonderful week. Have you done your Christmas shopping, shoplifting, or otherwise? I am super excited because it's another great show, Almost Famous. And every night, every Wednesday night, I try to bring you colorful stories, great people, artists, and whatnot. Tonight we are enshrined with just art and colors. We have a person, we have a wonderful artist, and she's a surrealist. She does a painter who's a self-taught artist. Get this. We have to find out more about her. And her work has been exhibited in notable galleries such as museums, such as the Forma Gallery in New York City, KP Projects, in a gallery in Los Angeles. I know some of the work has been in San Francisco, and Vancouver, obviously, because she's by Coastal. You guys, give it up for the one and only Deidre Sullivan Beeman. You like that? Holy mother of God. I finally get you on. Deidre, it's been a minute. How have you been?
I've been good. Have you done all your Christmas shopping?
No. No way, Jose. We opted for scratchers, for lottery scratchers and the likes. It's just so much easier. You know, you attach them to like a See's candy box and you just hand them over to the folks, a lot easier than having to go out there and like even buying cards. You know, nowadays there's a thing where people do the gift cards, and so they're usually out of stock. They're out of stock. They never have the ones you want.
Yeah.
I try to get some and I got like a 7-Eleven cards. I'm like, who's going to get 7-Eleven? I mean, I do 7-Eleven out of convenience, right? Like if you absolutely have to, but you know, yeah, no one's going to care for a 7-Eleven card, guys. Come on. Yeah. So I did some probing around and learned that you have quite an amazing story. So you're born to an artist. Your mom was an artist as well.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. You've done some digging.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. She's a, you know, she's in a bunch of notable museums.
When
I was little, I mean, that was the whole thing. You know, we used to travel to San Miguel de Allende.
Mm-hmm. Mexico? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Mexico. I didn't really like it. I wanted to be in my grandmother's pool. You know, I didn't really understand why we were on these trips. It would be my sister, myself, and my mom. My mom had a lot of artist friends in San Miguel, and she's still alive. She was a fine art photographer, but she still is a fine art photographer. She's not really working much lately these days.
Right.
Her last show was, I think, 2018. She was in a Biennale, but she's... you know, it was hard back then. She was female. She was actually, Ansel Adams was her mentor.
Holy moly. Wow.
Yeah. And she hung out with the likes of Mapplethorpe and some really interesting characters.
Pretty rad.
In my life, I mean, I didn't actually meet Mapplethorpe, but I met a lot of them. And so I grew up in kind of a very artistic household.
Yes.
You know, my mom is, it was like late 60s, 70s. My mom was kind of a character. She had a little VW bug, one of those light blue ones. And if it was not in the driveway, I knew I was going to be home alone taking care of my sister. It's basically the story. But we would go down to Mexico. There's one famous story where we went down to Mexico, and she did not stop at any of the stop signs in a roundabout. And she argued with the policeman, and then she ended up in jail, so I sat outside the jail.
Are you for real?
Yes.
I mean, it sounds funny in hindsight, but it must have been terrifying for a young child like you. Wow.
I'll say everybody in that police station was really nice to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've had a lot of adventures with her. She was not an easy mom, you know, it was like
Yeah.
kind of crazy. But on the other hand, she was really driven and in one sense being female, and I didn't really appreciate it at the time, but you know, in
Right.
hindsight, I really respect how hard she worked,
Sure.
her craft, and she was one of the first, actually she was the first woman to do use light boxes with her photography. Nowadays you see a lot of people doing that and it's more commonplace, but back then she had to go to Japan to get these light boxes made.
She was a pioneer of that sort of thing,
Yes,
huh? Wow.
she was a big pioneer of that.
So,
And then she has layers of photographs that would then you kind of see through it like water. So it was
Oh,
really.
that's so cool. Yeah, I see those like in movies, right? You can see the way,
Yeah.
yeah, that's pretty rad. It's a whole art concept in and of itself. It's like art, you know what I mean? Like the way you develop the photos and stuff. So yeah, you mentioned San Miguel de Allende, which is a very artistic town. It's a lot like Silver Lake, if I had to imagine. You know what I mean? Like it's very artistic over there, isn't it?
Well, it's funny because our family lived in Silver Lake for a long time, and
So
I
did this
loved
gentleman,
Echo Park. I went from Echo Park to Silver
which is now basically the same thing. It's tethered in even in some respects, I'll say it's even more like Echo Park has come up in such a way where it's no different than Silver Lake. I mean, I would just say like I call everything Silver Lake. I go through Echo Park and I think it's Silver Lake. You know what I mean? And
Right.
yeah, but it's interesting, right? Like just all the shops and stuff and the pop-ups and you know, they got the vegan burger joint. I forget what it's called, but it's like good burgers. They used to have them over in on Western somewhere down there and like everyone gets them and they have stickers and stuff outside. Really cool. You remember you know the area well, real well, right? On Sunset.
Yeah, I'm trying to think which restaurant
You know
that
where the
is.
B of A is, the Bank of America on that corner Echo Park Boulevard is? I used to live right up the street from there. Around the
Okay.
corner, it's across the street from the old Berrigan's. Remember the Berrigan restaurant, Mexican restaurant? Yeah,
Yes, it
it's
used
now
to
like a grill or something, like some bar, some cool bar, like a dive bar. And across catty corner from there is a restaurant, but they have good burgers, vegan burgers. I guess you just look it up and we'll go. But anyway, it's good. They're good burgers. They're super good.
Well, that's where I used to live, up Echo Park Avenue.
I did
That's
too. Right where it
still there.
forked, where the Lucky gas station was.
Yeah, but further up.
Right. You're like you're like we were way at the top overlooking all you peons. Hey, do you remember the kids? I don't want to go down this rabbit hole so much, but this such is the case with artists, right? Like people just delve into something and they keep peeling at the layers. But you remember the Kentucky Fried Chicken that was there? Like the Pioneer Chicken, was it?
Oh
They had a
my God.
market
Yes,
at the Pioneer
yes.
Market. Now it's like a vitamin store, right? They changed that whole thing,
Right.
yeah.
Lassen's, right? Lassen's.
Yeah, that's what it is. I haven't been down there in a hot minute, but that's so cool. So coming back to it, so you deviated, right? You detoured from art early on. I mean, let's take it back. Okay, so you won a contest when you're a child. Tell us about the coloring book contest when you're a kid.
My God, where did you do these
I don't
things?
know. It
I
just come
love
to me.
it. So, 5 years old.
Right.
You have. Wait, I have to go back though.
Let's go way
I
back.
my first art teacher,
Okay.
right? An artist mom, they become your teacher.
Right.
She would not let me have a coloring book because she thought that that was not going to spark the imagination, right? If you have these coloring book, then you're not. You're coloring somebody else's drawing.
Basically.
So I really wanted one. I was five. My friends had coloring books. And I also had one of those 64, the crayons with 64 colors in
Oh
it.
yeah, absolutely. It's a must-have for all anybody that's aspiring to draw or do anything. That's a must-have.
I love those crayons. So I went to a birthday party at 5, and it was really cool. The mother had taken the whole house and put it like a spider web, and you got one little thing of yarn, and then you followed it over around the house, and there was a gift for you. And my gift was a 500-page coloring book.
Wow.
I remember the outside color was this red book with the drawings on it. I was so thrilled. I went home and my mom was like, nope, you can't have that. And yeah, of course I cried. I probably threw a temper tantrum.
Sure.
And so finally she said, okay, you can have it, but you can't color in it. You can draw whatever you're looking at. You get to draw it on blank pieces of paper.
Wow.
And then you do your own drawing.
That's so cool.
So that she was very much against mimicking other people's work.
Right.
And she kind of had this Jungian philosophy about imagination, that it was kind of the organ for the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, you couldn't like fight against her, you know, she loved it. Like we had, you know, like acrylic paints, my sister and I, and, you know, she would love it if your hands were in the paint, you're just making a big mess. So she was that kind of mom. She wasn't the mom that was trying to control the mess. She was the mom encouraging the mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, through high school, I kept painting, and I won a bunch of national awards, and I won a prestigious award. And very so cool. I got offered a full scholarship to Pratt, which I completely turned down. And my art teacher, Chris Hayward, was just beside herself. She was super upset. She was thinking, you know, she was trying to talk me into going, but I really didn't want to follow in my mother's footsteps.
Right.
So instead, I applied to USC Film School and I got in there. And one of the reasons I think I got in there, well, one, I was female, and 99% of everybody applying was guys.
Right.
And the other thing was I had won this art award. So actually USC was really looking for people that were, in their minds, diversified in sure. other aspects. So they really also like that. I mean, back then they only accepted 20 people a semester.
Holy moly.
And so the odds were against me.
Wow.
I had a friend help me write the essay, and I remember turning it in, and I don't know, you know, it was great. It was a great experience being at USC. There was not just the teachers did I learn a lot, but the students were incredible. Sure. And, as I told you in the beginning, I met also my husband.
Right. All the roads led to USC for you to meet your wonderful husband. Congrats. That's how that worked.
I don't know who I would be with now.
Exactly. So it made sense for you to go there. That was your fate. And you met, you know what?
My fate. And I love California. I mean, I have to tell you, I had a babysitter probably roughly when I was about 5 or 6 years old that used to watch like Elvis Presley movies.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know who he was. I didn't even like Elvis Presley per se.
You mean the king? You didn't like the king of rock?
Well, I mean,
you're 5 years old. Yeah.
Little. But one thing I remember is there was some Elvis Presley movie that was probably on a stage in LA, but I thought it was, I thought it was Hawaii.
That's right.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It was supposed to be Hawaii, and I thought it was L.A.
Okay. It was probably most likely in L.A. It was a set, of course. So you're right. Partially right.
I couldn't comprehend that. So anyway, long story short, I remember coming up in my brain at that moment going, I want to go there.
Right.
And so it's very interesting because can I tell you about my LSD experience?
Yes, of course. You're an artist. You should.
So when I was 17 years old, some friends of mine, there were three other girlfriends of mine, and we all dropped acid. And then one of my friends really actually had a allergic reaction to the dinner she had eaten. So we started to freak out because we're all on acid and then she's getting these weird hives all over her face. So we had to think of what parent was cool enough that we could go to because it was an emergency.
I thought you guys started flipping out. Like, she's melting. She's melting.
She's starting to look like this, like, freaky monster. So.
That's got to be the craziest story I've heard in a while, truthfully.
To the LSD, they put a little speed in it. And the problem with that is it just speeds everything up.
Oh, so, my God.
And tripping and having.
Was she morphing into a giant alien? Yeah, she's trying to get help from you. You guys trying to get away from her.
So we go to one of my friend's aunt's house because we figured they're cool. We kind of knew they smoked pot. They were the parents that smoked
pot. The pot parents, sure. I knew a few of those.
So we went there and they decided that two of us had to stay where they took the one girl to the hospital. And, you know, it turned out to be an allergic reaction. She wasn't actually dying.
Good.
This is the pivotal moment. The pivotal moment was I'm stuck in their house and they had really little kids. And I just remember them so bizarrely scurrying around the house. I think I was supposed to be babysitting these.
Right. Kids. Were you tripping out on how they were scurrying around? Like
tripping out. And I decided I had to get something to eat. And I was trying to diet back then. So instead of eating food, I decided to eat ice cubes. Now, you know how bad they are for your teeth.
Right? Yeah.
You can't be chewing.
My girl loves chewing ice, by the way. For real.
I like it, too.
Yeah, it's great. Especially in the cold. You know, I go for ice cream when it's cold. I'm like their only customer. No, a lot of people, surprisingly so, a lot of people eat ice cream and, you know, when it's cold weather, you know, like. Wintertime and stuff.
I love him anytime too.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a moment where I had a pact with myself.
Okay.
Funny because, you know, there's all these theories about LSD can kind of like expand your brain or something. But the moment where I thought, I have to get out of here and I have to go to LA. Like, it was like, and I kind of made a pact with myself as these kids are screwing around, I'm chewing on ice cubes.
Yeah.
That this wasn't what I wanted. And, you know, I was about to, I think I was junior year, maybe not senior year. And I was at that critical moment where you're applying to schools.
It's the pivotal moment of your life. The watershed moment. Like, is this going to happen for me? Where am I going? Which way am I going?
So I basically only applied to schools in LA.
Cool.
Everybody in the right mind does. Who does that? But that's what I did. So I applied to UCLA. I even did Cal State Long Beach, which I told you earlier.
Yeah.
Spielberg went too. I went, I did them all. And I got into USC. I got into the film program.
Fantastic.
So off I went.
You got a BFA from there.
I did.
And what did you do first? What was your first project?
Oh my God, I had so many crazy jobs. I worked for this really crazy producer named Michael Schomburg.
And we want to hear some horror stories. I'm in the business. I love to hear stories. Never a dull moment in that industry, is there? Never.
He was insane. And it was very intimidating because he was this very intimidating guy. And he had one of those desks that would sat really high up. So when you went into his office, he was like staring down at you.
He's looking it down like you're the student, right? Wow.
Yeah. It was hard. And also he made me so nervous. You know, when you're nervous, you can't really do a good job. I mean, you might as well.
Were you an introvert, would you say, growing up?
Yeah. I was incredibly introverted. I was really shy. As a kid, like a little kid, I was super shy. Like I was that kid that would hide behind the parents.
Sure.
When I was that kid. And my sister was more outgoing and gregarious. And then I was really what I spent most of my time doing was just drawing or like that was always my escape.
Right. Route.
And I think truthfully, like one of the reasons I love to paint I love to do this job is because it kind of throws me into my world.
Okay.
And it takes me out of the real world,
right?
Right, like I can't escape it all.
Just pop an LSD tab and you get very creative, right? But so just getting the visual here. Exactly. I can already envision the person tripping out. Guys, help me. Your guys are like, oh shit, there's a monster. She turned into a fucking monster. Fuck. Let's get out of here. You know, you're running away from, she's trying to get help from you. Oh my God. I got a visual. Anyway, let's circle back. Your art pieces. Where do you draw inspiration from? Like, I mean, I know you had a journal. You had a dream sequence journal. Let's talk about that.
So I've been keeping a dream journal really probably since my late 20s, early 30s, like until like forever.
Sure.
The journal really was a journal, also like a drawing book and a scrapbook. Like if I see something cool, I kind of just tape it to it and scrap it.
Right.
And so that became like the jumping off point for a lot of the work. Like, well, actually something interesting started to happen is I'd come up with an idea for a painting and then I would go to my journal and there it was, like maybe a year ago, like a year before I actually consciously had the idea.
Wow.
And it's funny because when, like I'm a huge Carl Jung fan, and when Jung had his Red Book, when that came out, the family, Jung's family actually hid the book. They didn't want anyone to see it. So for about, I don't know, I think about, I don't know, 80 years or so, that book was hidden from the world because they thought, when the family, when Jung died and the family saw it, they thought like, it's like he was mad. He was crazy.
It's like a manifesto or something. Yeah. Jeez.
So, but it's interesting because I always think, oh my gosh, if someone saw mine, they might think the same thing. You know, there's just from dark moments to weird moments to anything. And when you write your dreams down, you know, dreams are just really, really strange. And
surrealism at its finest, huh?
It totally is. And what led me, what's really interesting is what led me down that rabbit hole was also tarot cards, because I had been so there's a place called the BOTA, the Builders Auditorium in LA. And they're this like 1930s group that's still around in LA.
Oh, really?
And I started taking classes from them. And what they believe is the major arcana of the tarot, you study and meditate on one card at a time.
Okay. So
I start with the Fool, which is zero. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was interesting because the Fool looks foolish. Uh-huh. He's on a precipice. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is, if he just takes a leap of faith, he can get to the other side of the, you know, he can not fall in the canon. He can just get to the other side and he's going to be fine. He can get to the other ledge. So for me, I would study each of the cards.
Okay.
And there's 21 cards, and there's something really beautiful about each card because you're sort of going through a metamorphosis as you know, study those cards. So I think that the dream journal and then the tarot kind of became this
hybrid or like a fusion.
Yeah, and almost like a spiritual adventure for me, as well as incorporating the art into it. So my earlier work was kind of tarot based.
Okay.
And then from that, well, actually, my real early work in high school was a bunch of young women that looked very morose. And then I went to doing all this dream journal and tarot stuff.
Esoteric kind of stuff. It's not easy. It's very intricate. And, you know, it's a whole thing in and of itself.
It's, right.
Yeah.
And then I decided to like the tarot has a lot of animals and stuff in it.
Okay.
And that's why I started to incorporate the animals, because for me, they're, you know, iconography of what the symbolism of those mm-hmm. animals mean.
Right.
So they really, so I'm telling a story through the work without blatantly telling you the story.
So like a juxtaposition of a human and an animal, like a lot of paintings have that, right? Like where you have a human and an animal, but somehow they're interconnected. It's something very spiritual.
Well, I do think there's, again, like a soul connection
right.
between my young women and these animals. And I think the animals are either, because I had film school training. So really my work is really narrative. Like there's a whole
right.
story happening with these pieces.
That's fabulous.
So these animals could be a protagonist or an antagonist, but okay. they're leading my heroine down on an adventure. Like she's going down some path.
Like Alice in Wonderland, sort of?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's her path of life. You know, to me, I really see like life like a video game.
Sure.
And we're all here to learn certain things. Like I'm giving a bad example of a
No, a not video at all. Game.
Like Super Mario Brothers.
Like Pac-Man.
You know, Mario has this adventure and meets these strange things. It's
yeah.
exactly how I see my young women.
Sure.
They have this adventure, and this animal sidekick is a part of them, but also separate. And that animal is kind of leading them down the path. So whether they want to go down the path or not want to go down the path, it doesn't matter, because they've got this. Well, I call it a daemon. So a lot of people think it's a daemon means a demon, and it actually doesn't mean a demon. A daemon was a Greek word for actually a spirit that was...
So like a shaman or something? Shaman? Yeah,
exactly. But a spirit that was connected with its host, but in a good way. So it wasn't demonic thing. It was a positive thing.
Right.
So basically, that's how I see these animals, as they're really, you know, sidekicks. And I think a lot of it does go back to Jung with the organ of the soul, where these creatures are actually almost part of these young women's soul. They're very tied almost as one, and yet they're also separate. So that's the connection I have with them. But I mean, all this goes back because really due to my mother, I think she always wanted the artwork to confront the unconscious mm-hmm. side of the brain. So I think I spent a lot of time, and that's why I really like the surrealists, because the surrealists used to play these games that were almost like board games, but they were to actually inspire and perk up the subconscious side of the brain so you can have this more active imagination. And so for me, this is part of what I love to do, and I feel the sort of the theosophy of the work is about.
You said you failed at some things when you were starting out. You want to care to elaborate?
You want to hear the real crazy jobs I had?
Yes.
I worked for Morg right out of USC Film School because, well, I got the job as the assistant, and then I really was not a great assistant, and I was so nervous. So that doesn't really go hand in hand. So I ended up quitting that job. I actually quit, and he did not seem disappointed. I was quitting. So then I went to, I guess it was a temp agency or something. And I worked for Gorman's, oh my gosh, it wasn't a morgue. Yeah, a mortuary. And so at the mortuary, I was doing accounting.
What?
But I couldn't go into the mortuary because I don't know if you've been in mortuaries.
Yeah.
But there's smelly. They're
yeah.
really, that formaldehyde just stinks.
Yeah.
So I used to crawl up, because the accounting office was on the second floor of the house.
Oh my God.
And I would take the fire escape up, climb through the window to go to
Were you afraid of the dead people?
Really was. I was scared. The whole thing creeped me
Yeah.
out. But so desperate, for money, I had to pay my rent.
You
I
imagine
was.
dropping acid then?
Oh my God. Maybe I needed a
So
drop acid.
probably, yeah. Sounds
Doing
like
too
it.
well.
Yeah, but that's crazy. And so tell me when you had that aha moment, like, you know what, screw this. I'm going into art. I'm gonna start. And how did you begin? Like, I know you started way back, but how did you really like take it serious and say, all right, I'm embarking on this journey and for good or ill, I'm still gonna do it, you know? I'm gonna do this and just start doing it yourself kind of thing. 'Cause I love the
Well,
do it yourself stories, you know?
weird little moments. Like one of the weird moments was, so I really wasn't good at a lot of the stuff except art stuff. So I ended up getting a job in the art department. And I worked for a woman, Ann Arends, who was like the queen of dirt. She would just make everything look dirty and aged. And back then, you would take Fuller's, you would take wet paint and you would paint the walls. And then you would take Fuller's earth, which now is carcinogenic, and you throw it in the air.
Oh my God.
The wall, the paint dries, you kind of scrape some of it off and you repaint the walls. And that gives it that kind of crumbly,
Get it.
textured,
Yeah.
dirty. Well, we would just, I mean, we were breathing that stuff all day long. And that was her big secret, was the Fuller's Earth. So basically, I think that kind of started my brain moving more towards the art, even though I still mentally wasn't 100% there. Then I basically, my husband got a show up in Vancouver, Canada, because a lot of shows were runaway productions, they call them. And runaway means they're not in LA, they're
Right.
in another city. And so we rented this little house, and the woman was an artist. And it was really inspiring for me. I started doing portraits of the kids, and I started making these little, rock, like I would paint on rocks. I mean, this sounds sort of corny, but I would do these like little gnome houses on rocks. And I would, the kids were at the Waldorf school because, again, I was pro, not a structured
Right.
school environment.
Sure.
And I don't know if you know anything about Waldorf, but they're all into gnomes and stuff. So I was taking these rocks and making these little gnome houses, and they were selling like hotcakes, and I would be making more and selling them. And then a few people would say, "Hey, could you do a portrait of my kid?" And then I would do, somebody's portrait. But I kind of started to dabble with it. And then I was back in LA and I started to take classes more seriously because I, even though I was self-taught this whole time, I really wanted to improve my technique.
Where did you go to take classes?
Well, it's interesting because I was kind of trying to figure out really what I really wanted to do. I knew I wanted to work with oils, and I had really only been doing acrylics because acrylics, if you really don't know what you're doing, they're kind of safer and easier to use. And I met this artist, Carrie Ann Botta. I don't know if she'd even remember this, but she talked about Ernst Fuchs, and he's an artist in Vienna. And he's kind of this wild character who he was actually a peer of Dali and friends with Dali.
I love Salvador Dali.
Yeah, I so do
Love his
I.
stuff, surrealism. Wow.
And Ernst is really interesting because he was actually Jewish, but during the Holocaust, his parents hid him in a nunnery. So he had this
Reminds me of
very,
Anne Frank
yeah, exactly,
story.
but very bipolar upbringing, from these parents who loved him and hid him with a bunch of, nuns. And so his paintings are like really intense, and they're very conflicted religious with his religious beliefs. I don't and he became very spiritual, and probably, and my interpretation, Fuchs became kind of anti-established religion. And but anyway, he had this whole way of painting. So, you know, I basically went to Europe and studied that and studied, tried to figure out, and so it was called the Miche technique, and I still do it to this day.
And it's somebody's last name, yes? Miche something, right?
Miche means, Miche, it's funny, it means mixed technique. So I actually use egg tempera and oil paint. Oil. Instead of going from acrylic to something easy, I went like up the goat hill to the most complicated way possible to paint, because
it's challenging too for you. You know, it's great.
And egg tempera is not, it's not as forgiving. You know, once you've set it and then you've got oil paint on it, it's really hard to, you know, keep changing what you're doing. If it's pure egg tempera, you can change it. But once you get it slathered with oil, you start building these layers up, and then it gets very challenging to make any changes. So, you know, I like to draw, and I like the drawings really specific. And there's something fun. Maybe it's going back to those coloring book days where, you know, I have a specific drawing and now I'm painting and, you know, on my drawing. But I like things really controlled and specific. I mean, I'm trying to loosen that side of me up, but it's hard because I love a clean line, and I like the drawings to look really clean.
Have certain specifics of how you want the framework, so you want to control that as much as possible, right? So in your eyes, you know what I mean? Like, it can turn out really decent. Yeah. Now, is there an art piece or something that you hold dear to yourself, like it's personal and you hold up to your vest, that you haven't put out there yet? I'm just wondering.
Well, it's funny. As soon as you said it, I was thinking over COVID, I did a piece called Blown About the Sky. And even though the work sometimes at first glance looks sweet, it's really kind of sometimes very, the work can be very intense if you kind of understand the narrative that is going on there. That one is about Anna Mendita, and she was a woman that was supposedly in New York City. She fell out of her New York window, and there's a whole theory that perhaps her husband
may have shoved her out.
Accidentally or purposely, we don't know. It's all hearsay. And they were having a big argument that night, that is for sure, because neighbors heard them fighting, and then she fell to her death. So one of the things about Blown About the Sky, of this woman falling, which is how I kind of also felt in COVID, I felt like everything was out of my control. I couldn't control it. And I felt, like I also didn't know when this was going to end. So I catch her, because I really like arrested motion, where you catch somebody in mid motion.
Right.
So this piece is, she's caught in midair falling, but there's also these pigeons, and they're kind of flying around her. And one has, you know, his wing stretched out to her. And, you know, it's like the 16th chapel image.
Oh, wow.
Two hands trying to meet, and you don't know, like, can that pigeon really save her, or is she going to fall to her death, or is she, you know, going to be
so open-ended, kind of like in the eyes of the beholder, huh? But then no one's been able to see that. I wonder if there's a possibility that I can sneak a peek at some point when you're back in LA.
Yeah,
it'd be great. Because, you know, you split your time between Vancouver and Los Angeles. And, you know, there's obviously cultural differences just in some respects. I wouldn't say a whole lot, but how do you, you know, like your paintings over there versus LA, is there any difference?
Well, that's a good question. One of the first paintings that, my first big show was at La Luz de Zeus. And La Luz de Zeus, I had a painting of the Queen, you know, back then when the queen was alive, mm-hmm. and she looked like a skeleton, and but she had her crown on and whatnot. And I painted that when I was in Canada. This was years ago. And it's interesting because that piece, I was really worried that Canada would be very upset with this queen. Because, well, let me explain. Canada is still part of the mothership, which is England. And so the Canadians take England very serious. In fact, they can't understand why, you know, we had a revolution and broke away from Mama, the right. queen. So basically when I did that piece, I was really kind of worried about it. And I'm a dual citizen, by the way. So,
right.
So I was a little nervous. I didn't know how well this piece would go. And then Matt Kennedy at La Luz de Jus saw it and put me in a show and really just changed my entire life because that piece sold to someone in Italy right away. And what happened is the image of it turned into zillions of t-shirts.
Fantastic.
Canadians were buying the t-shirts. Michelle Pfeiffer bought 50 t-shirts wow. of it. And it just became this thing.
Global phenomenon. Yeah.
It became a phenomenon and it really kind of launched everything for me. But it was interesting because it really came out of me really living in Canada and becoming, you know, the whole culture and this queen as this icon, and being very, very, very important to the citizens of Canada. So, I was a little terrified, you know, when I first released this image, and this painting. But to my surprise, I mean, Canadians have really, you know,
embraced it.
Great, yeah, they've yeah. really embraced it, and then, like I said, in LA, that really changed everything for me. So, and then there was another piece I did, which is kind of interesting. That same year, which was called Black Swan, and before that, I was doing paintings that really weren't getting any traction because. I was kind of hitting the nail on the head too hard.
Right.
And I don't think anybody really wanted to look at that. And, you know, like I had the Statue of Liberty with her head on a platter and
cool.
blood shooting out of her. And it really,
that's right up my alley. That's the kind of art I love.
Well, for real. I wasn't going anywhere. But when I did Her Majesty and then I did a piece called Black Swan was really interesting because that piece was a young woman naked, but you don't see much on this big black swan. And really what it was about is a black swan event, which is like COVID.
Yeah.
So, but you can tell she survives the event because the wow. swan, which also is the negative thing that's happening, actually is going to take her to safety. So again, that's kind of this protagonist antagonist situation that I'm talking about with these animal.
It's so paradoxical that the very thing that you think it would take her out is actually going to save her in some exactly. way, you know, it's like exactly. bizarre.
And so that's what I kind of love playing with the, you know, like the push me, pull me of the protagonist and the antagonist. And again, that is really all film school. And the other thing about film school for me was I had an amazing visual design teacher named Bruce Block. And he really just explained the, you know, visual design better than anybody. So I almost think if I'd gone to an art school, I don't know if I would have gotten such a great experiences that I got.
Kind of well-rounded, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. It was really an amazing time in my life, you know, being there. And like I said, it was back then, the film school was in a horse stable that
what?
they had. Yeah, it wasn't now USC's got this really fancy.
Where was the stable at? Was it out here like in Burbank or?
No, it was actually on It was at, you know, USC's, I don't know how old, but like 150 years old or something. And it was the original stables that was actually on the school property.
So oh, wow.
Down where USC is. And they converted it to the film school because the poor film school at that time really didn't have all the money behind it. You know, George Lucas and people, had come out of the school, you know, but they hadn't really started giving those big endowments yet.
It wasn't because they were young back then, probably students of the art themselves. They hadn't
made Star Wars by then because he was kind of the hero, you know.
Like, so go ahead.
People could do.
So everybody thought he went to USC, but he didn't graduate USC. He Spielberg went to Cal State Long Beach.
And so Spielberg, Lucas
went to USC. And Bogdanovich, right? Bogdanovich.
Yes, Spielberg.
Peter.
Peter Bogdanovich was actually in the producers program. They also had a producers program. Okay. It was aside from the production program, and which is another little interesting tidbit. But Spielberg, he did not get into USC. He applied to USC and didn't get in.
Wow, and I didn't know that. I learned something new today. Wow.
Right. Yeah. But it's interesting because it just shows how, you know, the school really doesn't matter. It's what you do with your knowledge. Because Spielberg actually is kind of interesting. When he went to Universal, he didn't actually have an office at Universal. He snuck into Universal and took over an office and just set up camp. Yeah.
Are you serious? It's like guerrilla style. Like, fuck it. I'm going to take over this office.
I mean, it's genius. Actually, now they have security and stuff to keep people from.
What a legend.
Yeah.
Just go in there, you know, make it your space. Why not? So we're almost out of time. What are some of the things you have coming down the pike that you'd like to sort of share with the 1.3 million subscribers and viewers?
Well, I have a show coming up. And Beautiful Bazaar is doing it at Corey Helford in April. And I have an installation, but I can't talk about it yet, but it's hopefully going to be in LA in February. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Let me know about that one. I want to turn out. I'll check out your studio maybe at some point. Meet your lovely husband. We could talk movies all day. Yeah, it's been nothing but fun for me. I mean, honest to God, I really wanted to get you on. And, you know, for obvious reasons, you're busy doing different things. And as we've learned, you know, you got quite a lot on your palate and going on. You know, you've done quite a bit and you're still doing a lot. And I'm enamored with the arts. I mean, I love art. You know, as you know, I totally like political art. I love like the guy Obey or in, you know, whatever he's done and Penske or I love all that stuff. Some of the graffiti artwork as well. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I love graffiti art too. I mean, what's great about graffiti art, it's art for the masses. Like it's just on the streets. Anybody can see it.
So yeah.
I think it's genius. That is one problem in Vancouver. They keep painting over graffiti. So
really?
It's horrible. Yes, it's horrible.
Yeah, it is.
Better, but Vancouver likes to keep it clean. Oh,
Deirdre, you need to come back. You need to come into the studio when you're down in LA, okay?
Well, thank you, Jim. I would love that.
I really appreciate you. And thanks so much for coming on. It's been a minute since we last talked. I know we're trying to make it happen for the past 2 months, and you had quite a bit going on. So I just want to thank you and thank the viewership tonight for another awesome, almost famous show. Yours truly, Jim Francis. Guys, a great Deirdre Sullivan being. Let's give it up.
Thank you, Jim. Thank
you so much. Until next time, guys. That's my show.
To Almost Famous with Jim Francis Meza, only on LA Talk Radio.